It's good to be here with you. Quick announcement that we're going to make concerning next week's meal. We're still planning on honoring our widows, widowers, our singles. But we do want to open it up, as Mark said, to our senior members and have a really good time, acknowledging that this time of year is Valentine's Day. And we want to acknowledge the love and the appreciation that we have for these individuals. Please sign up before you leave this morning. I'm going to take that sign-up sheet down as soon as I leave this morning, because since we've had a little bit of delay in sign-ups and so forth, I still need to get with any of the youth that are willing to participate and be like, here's your secret Valentine that you're going to provide a card for. You're going to sit with them during the meal. And just in case, I don't believe there was any confusion on this, but just in case, when I say youth for this event, I mean youth of all ages. From the youngest to the oldest of our youth, this is a multi-generational event that I believe, if we're, you know, willing to get out of our comfort zone a little bit, could have the potential to not only become a tradition thing, but could become a very powerful, uplifting thing for individuals during, you know, because holidays, any kind of holidays, is one of those things. It's an exciting event for some. It's a very enjoyable event for some, but for others, it's kind of sad and depressing at times. I'll never forget with Christmas or Thanksgiving that every time, this was back when my grandmother was living and my great-grandmother was living, every time we would say a prayer before the food, my grandmother would always look at me and say, now I understand, I say this every year, but do this for your great-grandma. Say something that's going to mention your papa, because she's a little sad this time of year that he's still not here. And so I would do that every year for her, and to try to, uplift her spirits a little bit. So please sign up before you leave this morning, because I'm going to take that down so that we can get some things taken care of and addressed for that. So for the next 2 months, I know when you hear sermon series 2 months, you're like, whoa. But for the next 2 months, continuing this theme of one word, where we're taking one word from Scripture and we're seeing the meaning of that word, we're seeing how that word applies to us. We've got this categorized. It's not just a random group of words. They kind of go with a theme for either a month or, in this case, 2 months. For the next 2 months, we're going to look at words that associate with our Christian character. With our Christian character. See, here's the thing. We come together once a week, twice a week, if you count Wednesdays. If you divide Sundays up, twice on Sundays. But the community doesn't see us when we're together in this building. That's not what the community sees. This, what we're doing right now, is not what your work associates see. This is not what the people at school see. This is not what the people in our communities see. This may not even be what some of the people in your family, or some of the things in your family, see. They may know that you show up and come to worship, but this isn't what they see. Your character is what they see. My character is what they see. And it's a very powerful sermon. And it can be very powerful in a positive way, but it can also be very powerful in a negative way as well. You know, one of my biggest fears, I guess I was doing the math yesterday, I believe it was 10 years ago, it'll be 10 years ago in August that my family moved back to this area. We moved back to Highway 56, we were technically in Jackson County at the time, now we live near Allgood, but we were technically in Jackson County with a Cookeville address. I don't understand how the house next to me had a Jackson County address, but my house had a Cookeville zip code, and that house was technically, you know, a few feet closer to Cookeville than my house was. I don't understand how that worked, but it did. I remember my biggest fear moving back was, what's going to happen when I run into people that I haven't seen in 10 years? What are they going to think about me? Are they going to still see that same person 10 years ago? Or are they going to see the person that I am now? Are they going to see me as the person that I was, or see someone that can change, that can grow as an individual? So our character is very powerful. our character and what we do and how we treat people in this life and how we move through this life with intention. It's very powerful and has a lot of meaning behind it. The first word that we're going to look at in this series comes from the text that was read in Matthew chapter 9. And if you haven't kind of gotten kind of how I kind of develop sermons, for the most part, we stay in one place. I don't move around a whole lot in lesson preparation. But in Matthew chapter 9, beginning in verse 9, before this point, even back in chapter 8, Jesus is doing a lot of amazing things. There's been a lot of healings that go on. Jesus is teaching some very powerful lessons. Matthew chapter 8, he's going to talk about the cost of following him, that there is a price that has to be paid. He calms a storm. He heals two men with demons. He heals a paralytic. I mean, he's doing some pretty spectacular, and a word that many don't like to use, some pretty radical things for that time. And you know, I heard something the other day that I never really thought about, and it's such a very foundational element. They didn't crucify Jesus because he was healing the sick. They didn't crucify Jesus because he was casting out demons. They didn't even crucify Jesus because he was a teacher, because he was a rabbi. They crucified Jesus because Jesus said, "Hey, you want to see God? Look at me. I'm God in flesh." That's really what got these religious leaders up in a tizzy the most, and got them to the point where we got to take this guy out because he's really causing an uproar. But in Matthew chapter 9, beginning with verse 9, we see that Jesus passes on from there after he heals this paralytic. And he sees a man called Matthew. So he sees Matthew. So this is where Jesus is going to invite Matthew to follow him. And just so happens that it's recorded in the book that Matthew penned, Matthew. So Jesus sees this guy, but he doesn't just see him anywhere. He sees him at a tax booth. So Matthew is a tax collector. And tax collectors, their reputation wasn't very highly thought of. Not only were they looked at as thieves, that they're taking your money, but also they worked for the enemy. These were Jews that worked for the Roman government. So not only do you get a slap on the wrist for taking my money and pocketing a little bit of it for yourself, sometimes a lot of it, but you also get a double slap on the wrist because you're in cahoots with the enemy. You're in cahoots with the oppressor, the one that has come in and has taken control of God's people. And really, what Rome has done was brilliant on their part. They gave the Jews just enough freedom in their religion to basically keep them calm. To keep them calm. And so he passes by this tax booth and he says to Matthew, "Follow me." And Matthew gets up and he follows him. Now what's so interesting about this, it says as Jesus reclined at the table. So he's comfortable there. You don't recline unless you're comfortable, right? I remember we were changing our furniture out a few years ago. We'd had the same furniture since we got married, and some of it was starting to really show its age, and we were changing our furniture out, and I remember the hardest thing for me to let go of was that recliner. That was my chair. You don't recline unless you're comfortable. Jesus is sitting comfortable at the table, but he's not just sitting at any table. The text tells us he's sitting at a table with many tax collectors and sinners. They had come there, and the same word, they reclined at the table with Jesus. Two things jump out at me right there. First thing, they reclined at the table with Jesus. They felt comfortable around Jesus. I find it interesting how the only person that anyone could say, could make the claim, you know, is sinless, never sinned. He could relate to temptation, but he couldn't relate to that feeling of giving in to temptation that you and I can relate to people with. Sinners felt comfortable around him. And he felt comfortable being around them. He didn't feel awkward around them. He didn't feel as if, I can't have a conversation with these people. I can't relate to these people. And then I look at us and I look at myself and I'm like, man, I've sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Scripture teaches that. I know what it feels like to mess up, to fall short. And yet so often I act like I'm holier than thou, that I can't sit at a table with people that are struggling with sin and have a conversation such as Jesus did. Second thing that jumps out at me is this word sinners. We talked a little bit about tax collector, but I want you to understand this word sinners. When it says sinners, and especially the perception that the religious people had of these people that we'll look at in just a moment, I don't believe it's talking about like, oh, hey, that's my next door neighbor. He's a good guy. He just doesn't go to church type sinner. This is talking about people that are living in some very sinful situations. We see in Scripture multiple accounts. We see individuals that are caught in adultery. We see individuals that are, you know, that tradition tells us that there's a very good chance that they could have even been prostitutes at certain areas in their times in their life. People with all different kinds of sins that are coming to this man, that are coming to this amazing teacher, the Son of God. And when they come to him, they find something there. They find this peace in being in his presence, this comfort. Now, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. Jesus never, you know, said, hey, your sin's okay. That's cool. Just do what you want to do. Every time that Jesus went and helped someone, it was go and sin no more, right? So he didn't say, hey, your sin's okay. But only what Jesus did was he gave them an escape from sin. He gave them hope that this situation doesn't have to be forever. So Jesus is not only comfortable at this table, but these individuals are comfortable at this table with Jesus. It makes me wonder sometimes if the doors that we claim are open to community, if the doors that we claim are open to sinners, why is it that when so many enter the doors, they say, that was the most uncomfortable situation of my life? And I think that in the moment anyone should walk in this door, whether you've been here at this church your whole life or whether it's your first day, that it should be the most comfortable situation you've ever stepped into. Because if these people can sit at a table with the perfect Son of God and have this sense of comfort, shouldn't they be able to walk in those doors with a bunch of imperfect, redeemed by the blood of the Lamb Christians and feel a sense of comfort as well? So here's the thing, though. This scenario really stirs up the religious folk. It makes them very uncomfortable. So as we continue to read here, behold, some of the Jesus out verse 11, and when the Pharisees saw this, they said to the disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? How dare him? How dare him sit with these people? If anything, he should be sitting with us. We're the churchy folk. We're the religious folk. He should be sitting with us. He should be consumed with us, not these people. Why does your teacher do this? But when Jesus heard it, he said, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I came not to call the righteous, but to call sinners. Jesus, trying to get it through their thick skulls, uses something that I think we can all understand. What does a well person need with a doctor? I know that they recommend yearly checkups, and that's kind of the exception on this illustration here. But primarily, you don't go to a doctor unless you got a problem. And how would you feel if you called to make an appointment and you said, hey, doc, I am really sick. Do you got an opening today? Yep, I got an opening at 1:15, but here's the problem. I can't see you. Why? Because you're sick. Call me back when you're well. I'll have a spot open for you then. I think you're going to find a new doctor. Because that's the reason we have physicians. That's the reason we have doctors. To help us when we are sick. She says, I want you to understand something about my mission. I want you to understand something about me. The whole purpose of me was to go and to find those that are spiritually sick, to actively seek them out, and to call them to me, to bring them to me. Because the people that are righteous, they're like the people that are healthy. They don't need this right now. They already have that relationship. They already have that peace, that comfort. So I came to call these people that are sick. And he says, look, here's what I need you to go and learn. I need you to learn something. Because if you learn this, you'll understand. And it brings us to that key word, mercy. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. This is the first of two times Jesus will quote this. In Matthew chapter 12, Jesus is going to quote this again. When Jesus and his disciples, when there's this issue of the Sabbath day, they go through the grain fields and his disciples, they're hungry, so they begin to pluck heads of grain and they begin to eat. But of course the Pharisees see it and they throw a fit. These people are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath. So Jesus throws it in their face a little bit. Have you not read of what David did when he was hungry? And those who were with him, he entered the house of God and ate the bread of the presence. That wasn't lawful for him to eat, nor for those who were with him, but only for priests. And he kind of goes on, has a little bit of more to explain about this. But in verse 7 of chapter 12, I think the phrase, it makes me wonder. My wondering on this is Eric's non-divine, non-inspired commentary of just thinking here. When I read this, I wonder if this is the same group of people. I wonder. And here's why. He says, and if you had not known what this means, a couple chapters earlier, I just told y'all, go and learn what this means. You didn't study for the test, evidently, so you don't know the answer. I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would have not condemned the guiltless, for the Son of Man is Lord of Sabbath. If you would have known what it means, so I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you wouldn't have got so bent up out of shape on this. If you would have known what it means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you wouldn't have got so bent out of shape that this rabbi, this teacher, was sitting at the table with sinners and tax collectors. It wouldn't have got you so riled up. So what do you mean, Jesus? What do you mean that you desire mercy and not sacrifice? The thing about this is this is a quote directly from Hosea chapter 6. This is a quote from Hosea chapter 6. And we're going to turn to Hosea chapter 6 together. And let's read that real quickly here. We're going to start in verse 1 of Hosea. Because to understand what Jesus is saying and what this means for us, we've got to see where this was written, why it was written. Beginning in verse 1, it says, come, let us return to the Lord. He has torn us to pieces, but He will heal us. He has injured us, but He will bind our wounds. After 2 days, He will revive us. On the third day, He will restore us, that we may live in His presence. Let us acknowledge the Lord. Let us press on to acknowledge Him. As surely as the sun rises, He will appear. He will come to us like the winter rains, like the spring rains that water the earth. Now, doesn't this sound good? It sounds like the people of Israel are ready to return to God. The first three verses. They are just really saying the right things. Let us return to God. He's restoring us. Yes, we went through this turmoil, this tumultuous time. We went through this turmoil. We went through all this pain and the suffering. And it was our fault. We brought it on ourselves. We acknowledge this. It's time to go home. It's time to return to the Lord. Man, that just sounds beautiful. They're saying all the right things. He's going to heal us. He's going to bind our wounds. He's going to restore us. But notice what God has to say in the next three verses. Verse 4. What can I do with you, Ephraim? What can I do with you, Judah? Your love is like the morning mist. It's like the early dew that disappears. Therefore, I cut you in pieces with my prophets. I killed you with the words of my mouth. Then my judgments go forth like the sun, For I desire mercy and not sacrifice, an acknowledgement of God rather than burnt offering. God accuses the people here that their love is like the dew on the grass. It's like the morning mist. It's there for a brief moment, and then it's gone. It's gone. He says, all that's left are these empty forms of burnt offerings. And the point that he's trying to get across to his people, and the point that Jesus is trying to get across to these Pharisees, and I believe to us today by quoting this, is that God wants his people to be alive in their hearts. He wants them to have a feeling of affection toward him and mercy towards each other. It's not simply about doing the right things. Yes, doing the right things is part of it, but that's not all of it. We can sit here this morning and do all the right things and leave here with our hearts just as far from God as they've ever been. This is a fraction of it. Because when we go into this world, what do people see? What do we show people? We can sit here all day and say all the things that we think God wants to hear. And maybe what we need to hear this morning is this: I desire mercy and not sacrifice. So what does this mean for us? How does this change my life? How do I take this and apply this to my life? I think the first thing is Jesus wants people to want Him, not people who pretend to want Him. And people that really want Him are going to show mercy to others because mercy was shown to them. Jesus wants people who want a relationship with Him, not people who just offer up sacrifices. Not people who just go through the motion. We've talked about this Hebrew word for mercy, hesed, a lot, it seems like, recently. It seems like it's been brought up sometimes twice a month. It's a difficult word because it's translated some as loving kindness. It's translated as faithful love, steadfast love. It's really this idea of loyal love, this idea of mercy, this idea of compassion. This idea of compassion. True love shows mercy. True love shows compassion. That's what loyal love does. That's what steadfast love does. Why God's steadfast love is this outpouring of mercy and compassion on His people. And that's exactly what's expected of you and I. It's clear here in Matthew chapter 9 that Jesus is dealing with people who are pretending to care about God, but do not have a true relationship. And Jesus tells them, look, I'm interested in people that are interested with being forgiven, who want to be forgiven, who want to be healed, not people who did not see their need. And I'm here to show these people mercy. And I want you to go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. Jesus wants people who are ready to show mercy to others, but because they care about souls like He does. Let me give you a real example. I've told this story a long time ago on a Sunday night, so I know not everyone's heard it, so I want to tell it again. I like the story. If you've heard it, I like it, so entertain me. I'm just kidding. When I was 15, driver's permit, I drove my grandma to church. It's funny, I had a flat tire one Sunday after church, and I pulled over on the side of the road. Someone stops and says, hey, are you okay? I said, I got a flat tire. They didn't offer to help me with the flat tire. I didn't have a spare. My first car, a 1990 Chevy Beretta. Oh, yeah. Nice big rust spot, you know, on the hood of the car. I jumped that thing into a creek bed like Dukes of Hazzard. If I knew I'd come out okay, I'd do it again because it was fun. But they pulled over, "You okay? I didn't have a spare." And my grandma's like, "Yeah, we're okay." And they go, "They offered my grandma a ride home and left me sitting on the side of the road, and she took it." Like, "Boy, I talk so highly of you, and here you leave me sitting on the side of the road." One Sunday night, I drove her to church because it gave me an excuse to drive, and a young family is coming into church. I actually went to school with this young girl. They didn't have a lot. To my knowledge, they'd never really even been in church. It was summer. It was hot. What do most girls wear in the summer when it's hot? Shorts. And we live in a society, this ain't a sermon on modesty, so I'm not running into all that. But she had some very high cut off jean shorts. Very low cut spaghetti strap top. And they were a little bit ahead of us walking towards the door. And there was one lady, it was her parking spot. Boy, if you took that parking spot, it wasn't even like, she had a hard time getting around. And this was the worst handicap parking spot because it kind of set on a slope. Like, who puts a handicap spot on a slope? We did. The lady gets out of the car, she cuts them off. I've never seen this lady move so fast in my life. Cuts them off, and she grabs that young girl by the arm as tight as she can. And she says, "Before you step foot in that building, you better get some proper clothes on." They turn around. The girl's crying. I don't blame her. I'd be crying too. Never been here. I don't know you people. She sits down on the sidewalk. She's crying and we're walking. And I watch my grandma go over, and she goes and she sits by her. And the reason I point that out is that was a hard job. It was hard enough for my grandma to get into a regular chair sitting down when her joints would hurt. She sat down on a sidewalk with this young girl and her mother. And she said, "You don't worry about her. You don't worry about what she says. You don't even worry about what you've got on right now." She said, "You come inside and we'll sort the rest of this stuff out later." And they came inside. I think this illustrates exactly what Jesus was saying. That person needed to go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. Because I came to call sinners. And if we are the people of mercy that we should be, then I'm going to tell you something. There's going to be people coming in these doors that don't look like us. That don't dress like us. And that maybe not in that moment think like us. And we should be able to recline at the table with them. Because we are the ones that have experienced the mercy of God. And they should experience mercy from us. Compassion. Long suffering. Loyal, steadfast love. Think about this in the context of this story. Jesus calls Matthew to follow him. That's compassion because he's a tax collector. He's an outcast. Matthew then goes and rounds up his fellow tax collectors and sinners. And they receive the same mercy and compassion as Matthew did. Come meet Jesus and follow him. Matthew had mercy on others just as Jesus had mercy on him. Matthew did not become self-righteous because Jesus called him to follow him. Oh, think about that, church. Think about that. He did not become self-righteous because Jesus asked him to follow him. Neither should we. Neither should we. Jesus reclines at these tables, and while the Pharisees saw nothing more than tax collectors and sinners, I imagine this. Jesus knew their names. Jesus sat at the table with these people and invested in them, got to know them. There's great power in that. I want to close with this one thought. I read a quote that I think summarizes this perfectly as we close together. And if I got a little too long-winded this morning, I apologize. I enjoy this new layout, but this new layout kind of makes us preachers mess up a little bit on our timing, okay? So if I got a little long-winded, I apologize. John Piper says this, mercy comes from mercy. Our mercy comes to each other. Our mercy to each other comes from God's mercy to us. So our character, to people in our community, in our workplaces, in our schools, in our homes, do they see people that know what this means? I desire mercy and not sacrifice. This morning, if you're not a Christian, if you've not committed your life to Jesus, we don't care. Jesus doesn't care about the past. He cares about your future. And Jesus wants to give you a future. And He wants to give you a fresh start. He wants to give you that opportunity to forget about the past, to put it behind you. If you need to commit your life to Jesus this morning through obedience and baptism, we want to take care of that need. This morning, and if you need compassion, if you're our brother, you're our sister, you're our family here, and you're struggling, you know what? I've never understood why we just open up the avenue of prayer for people that are struggling, that have rendered obedience to the gospel. If you need prayer in general, we want to take the opportunity to show mercy and compassion and pray for you and bear your burdens. If you have a need this morning, we encourage you to come while we stand and while we sing.